Get to speak with Anna and Paul, and it's my great pleasure now to welcome you both to Near FM today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks and we're
so
very glad to have you here in the studio. Traffic on old traffic, you found us.
Just about.
And well worth waiting for. Now, I mentioned last week that you were coming in, so we have we've an idea of what we're going to talk about, which is your play that you are running now in the Civic Centre in Tala, and it's called The Gods of the Ozarks, and it started last night. So, Paul, any disasters? Good.
Surprisingly enough, you know, you always wonder after your dress rehearsal, you think, hope everything goes well, but
it did.
It went smoothly. It was great.
You were happy with it?
Very happy.
Really happy, yeah.
Ah, that's good. And tell us a little bit about the play before I talk about yourselves. What is the play about?
So basically, the play is set in America in the early 1800s, sort of on the frontier.
It's basically follows the story of a doctor whose beloved wife is dying, as are many of the people in the town, because he's not a very good doctor. Because at the time, medical schools, they weren't allowed to examine human cadavers, to examine human bodies. So everything was very much based on ideas there from the outside. Herbs and leeches were a big part of medicine at the time. A lot of things they didn't know about how the body worked on the inside. So Jonah, the doctor who I play in the show, is asked by his wife, Sally, to, when she dies, to use her body and try and learn about what was the cause of what killed her. And so he agrees to do this, but after she dies, he's not quite able to manage it. But some other things start to happen, which kind of involve him getting in a bunch of escapades where he does get to start to learn about bodies. But because he starts learning about the bodies, bodies kind of start disappearing from graves, and people start thinking in the town that people that they know in their community have started resurrecting. Which leads to...
Is this a comedy now?
It is a comedy.
It is a comedy.
I know, it doesn't sound like it, but it's a black comedy. So there's elements are very serious, but yet there's a lot of humor. Because it's a cast of eight, and they're all from the town, and they're really colourful, beautifully written characters.
Pioneering days.
Yeah. So you have the woman who came in with all, you know, the one woman who came in with a flock of men to the first, you know, town, and she's now, you know...
Feisty.
Yeah, she had to build all the buildings because there wasn't a builder. She, you know, had to be the constable because... You know, someone started misbehaving and she had to do it, you know, and then she's also the grave digger. So she kind of just, you know, and so she's a really
strong character.
Oh, yeah, really fantastic.
A great role for a woman.
Great role for a woman. And she's also been in the town for a long time. So it's lovely because it's a role for, you know, for a woman who's not, you know, in her 20s. So she's, yeah, it's an older character.
And how many in the cast? Eight?
Eight,
you said?
Yeah.
Are they mainly men or women?
It's actually three men and five women.
Right.
That's yes. Good odds.
And who are they by occupation? Or do they have an occupation?
They do. And so we have a harlot.
Good start.
That's her occupation. The grave digger, Lafayette. Then we have Jonah's wife, who's a poet. And we have their daughter, who's searching. And then we have the heiress to the lead mine. So those are the women. And then with the men, we have the doctor, the drunk, and which I guess is his occupation, and the preacher.
So it's all there. You don't have to go to a city for any of that. It's all in this little spot.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
And would you consider it a social history at the time? Could you ever put in that setting?
I think there, it definitely is. It really, Matthew Cole Kelly, who's the playwright, you know, did an incredible amount of research. He actually comes from a medical background himself, as well as being a playwright. So he really knows his stuff from this era. So he studied it, and, you know, it's lightly worn in the play, but it everything is very authentic. The language and the kind of circumstance that people were in at the time, but also what's great about it is, and this was really striking when we were talking to people after the show last night, is how resonant still many of the ideas and situations in the play are even today. Even when we think we know a lot more about how all these things happen.
Well, that's interesting. And what about the costumes, the setting? It was difficult to get the scene set, if you like, with costumes and settings to bring the story out. Mm. Was that difficult to do, to get the proper...
Well, luckily we have one of our company members, Tara McKeever, is just great with... She's a milliner, amongst other things. So she has a great eye for costume and burlesque and stuff like that, which is part of the yes. part of the harlot there. So so she actually just done a great job with setting it, and it is so important because the costumes kind of land us in the period more so than anything else. Mm. And we've just got like it's a lovely palette, and you know, and even she had to. Spoiler alert, no, it's not a spoiler. but there is one of the gods is in a very white wedding dress, so Tara had to, you know, find a dress and then
of the period
close to the period, and then she did all this, added all this lace and beautiful stuff, you know, so she put a lot of work into it, and again it's like this, you know, she just continued to whatever we needed to do the nips and tucks to make it look more authentic.
Valuable person.
Very valuable person. Yeah.
And is it based in a place? Is there a place? I think there is, called Ozark. Is there somewhere?
So the Ozarks is a region in the States, and it kind of covers around the Ozark Mountains. So it's Arkansas, Missouri, and
bits of Kansas.
And yeah, so it's quite a large region. So our Ozark in the play is actually a mythical town. So right. It's kind of based on a bunch of different towns, but it, you know,
yeah,
it feels real.
But yeah, so it's a mythical town in Missouri is where it's being set.
It is.
Yeah,
and but it's still, you know, it's there. It's a good tourist area now, is it not?
Yes.
Yeah, it's actually quite
beautiful.
It's beautiful now. I think it's considered kind of a lot of resorts around there now. It's one of those, we don't know it so well here, I don't think, but in the States,
is that part? Of the
yeah,
States,
it would be yeah. like oh yeah, yeah, going to the Ozarks for the summer. That would be
and crocodile. It's a crocodile country.
I think so.
I read somewhere that it was. That's not very cheerful. Yes, we go back to the harlot. Is there any singing and dancing? You mentioned burlesque, Anna.
There is a little dancing. Yeah, she does. She's practicing to go to the big city.
Right.
So we see a little bit of her routine that she's working on. Good. You know, so she probably's never actually seen it fully herself. She's probably only heard about it from people traveling through.
Right. She interprets.
So
it.
She interprets it. Yeah, it's her own kind of version of it. So. Yes, that's great. And there's a bit of singing too, but it's not a musical kind of thing. There's just the drunkard does provide us with a
very necessary.
But we do have there is great music involved in it. We actually had two musicians design kind of a score and a sound design for the show. That's part of how it's created. So there definitely is kind of a musical feel throughout how it's created. Yeah,
in the background. And your cast, are they all professional actors, actresses? Or
absolutely, yeah. No,
professional, are they?
They all are, all professional. And, you know, we have one younger actress, Helena White, who plays my daughter in the show. But everyone else particularly are really experienced actors who've done a lot, working in America and working in London, doing things in the West End, and... You know, it's a pretty phenomenal cast. You know, it's really, when we first time we put them all together, and actually the first time we did them before, we did a publicity photo shoot for the play, and Anna was looking at them all lined up and going, oh my God, we get to go into rehearsals with this group of people. This is
very exciting. They're young to me. They're a young cast, are they?
Well, I think they'd be delighted you'd say that.
I thought they looked good.
Ah, yes.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
They're definitely full of life, that's for sure.
Yeah, but it is a range of... ages, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Which is nice.
And talent.
And talent, absolutely.
Very experienced to those starting off.
To young, yeah, absolutely. So, and what's been great is we've had opportunities too, like our designer is recently graduated as well, and our stage manager is still training at the Lear. So it's a really lovely mix of people. So even on the tech side, we have this people who are more experienced, like our lighting designer would have been in the business for a very long time, versus people who are coming into it. So there is this real sense too of being able to mentor or learn from each other.
It's
a real collaborative.
So that's a happy company.
Yeah, I think so.
Pick up the vibes, Anna.
Yeah.
So, where did it all start for you, Paul? Where did you get this creative instinct? Did it come from school or at home or where?
It's funny. I think I never was like a drama school kid. I didn't know, you know, I see, you know, teenagers now who have great opportunities in youth theatre, but I had no idea. I didn't know anyone involved in that kind of thing. So I think, though I was quite creative, I think when I really fell in love with theatre was last year of school. I had we had an English teacher who was amazing, you know.
Makes such a difference.
He was so inspiring. He put together a little group one night. He basically said, "Hey, any of you guys want to go to see some plays?" And I don't mean he didn't mean like Hamlet or something that we were studying. He said, "Do you want to go to town and I'll arrange tickets?" And so there was a small group of maybe 8 or 9. We're like, "Sure, yeah." So we would meet him in the city. And we were all like, so
yeah.
So
you know, excitement. Where was school?
De La Salle in Churchtown.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
So basically, he kind of started that, seeing these shows, and then we put on a production of Juno and the Peacock, the Sean O'Casey play.
Always popular.
My last year, and I got to play Johnny Boyle in it, which is an amazing part because you have a limp, I'm missing an arm,
yes.
I see ghosts, I have a great death scene where I'm dragged out of the flat. It's a terrific
brings
part.
Out the best of your talents.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much to do in it. So I think kind of fell in love with it a bit then, and. Started from there, I think.
And what did you do then? Did you go to any drama schools or?
I did, not immediately. I think I was kind of still finding my way. So I initially went and did law in university. That was kind of where I started out, and thought I would do a little bit of drama society in university. But I think really once that all finished, I realized though I really the law is really interesting. I think I really wanted to be in the courtroom and making big impressive final arguments.
Must come in handy when you're reading contracts.
Yes, it does. Exercise. Yeah, I can sort of see through a few things and go, I see what that means.
Yes.
But I think
you have it on hold. It's always there to back to.
Yeah, that's what my mother always says. You know, you can always fall back on that.
Our mothers do.
There's still time to become a solicitor.
But I'll write that script. Yes, indeed. And do you think it's necessary, kids starting off to go to the Gaiety School or some drama school, do you think they should start instead of just kind of doing bits here and there and get good grounding?
Well, Anna, you work a lot with youth. What do you think?
it's interesting. I think that, to me, the old system of apprenticeship, of actually doing and learning is really important.
Basic,
yeah.
Yes.
I think going to drama school, we both went to drama school, that's where we met. And I think it's really helpful for really honing your craft,
yes.
For really understanding and getting a wider range and a wider experience, because you'll never have quite the same incubation space when you're working professionally, because you need to fail. You need to try things and fail, and it feels harder to do that in a public setting than in a school setting. So I think there's a lot of different ways in, so I would never say there's only one way.
Because talent will out the end, will it?
Yes, absolutely.
It does, yes. It does. And hard work
and work.
Persistence, because you do develop. Like, we are better actors now than we were, when we first met.
Of course.
And of course, yes, it's training and all those things too, but acting so much is a part of like being a human being. So the more life experience you have and you're able to bring, it makes you a richer actor.
And that's what makes a good actor, bringing life experience with you. And
I think being fully human as you possibly can be.
Yes. Oh, that'd take you far. And who selected now this play? How does that work? Do you have a readathon or?
Well, basically, what we have is we have a new play festival that we've been doing every year for this year. We're going to be doing it in November, and it'll be our 8th year.
That's very interesting.
Yeah,
I was reading about that.
Yeah,
tell us a little about that.
So it's called November. So we started it when we were living in New York at the time, and some friends of ours were starting a theater in upstate New York in a small town called Tivoli. And they opened this space, and it was a converted carpenter shop that they turned into a theatre. And as soon as I went into it, I just had this flash that this would be a great space for a play reading festival. And luckily, Michael Rhodes, who runs the theatre there, is willing to take risks and take chances. And he was like, okay, cool, let's put it together. And this was, I think, around September of that year. So we're like, okay, yeah, sure. What about, oh, November. Okay, yeah, we'll make it happen. So the first time through, we just kind of curated it.
So that's where we got the name.
Yes, basically we did it in November, and I love naming things. I get I'm terrible with puns and things, so I'm a sucker for it. So as soon as New Play Festival in November, I was like, okay, it's called November. This is the name of it. Yes. I don't care. Even if we have to move it to another month, I don't care. This is the name. We're sticking with it.
So you're taking it here now?
We have. We brought it here 2 years ago in 2017.
How did that work out?
Great, yeah. Well, it was a change because you're moving it from a small town, kind of, because it was almost like the playwrights were going away on retreat, and you had people coming from all over, kind of a wide space from different towns who had come to see things. Whereas now you're doing it in Dublin, you're doing it in a big city, so that changes the kind of feel of it. But it's been really great. The people have it's responded so well, and it's a really interesting thing too, because it's so much for the playwrights, because you get to ask the playwrights to come and attend their reading and do a Q&A afterwards to get the real responses from the audience about how it works.
Audience there as well, yeah.
Yeah,
so it's wide open, yeah.
Absolutely, you do an audience, and yes, they have to do a question and answer session afterwards, where both the audience get to ask the playwright, like, oh, what inspired you, or how do you work?
Good feedback, yeah.
But then they also get to ask them, well, what was confusing? What doesn't work? Where were you bored? What did you love? You know,
very,
and that really helps them then move on to the next stage.
Yes,
because it's a real audience. It's not just other writers or other people in the industry who are telling them something. It's genuine, real people who are going, I just don't understand that moment, or I love that character, and that's a huge thing for helping them get it a full production.
Mm. And where is it going to be? Where are you going to have it?
This year, it's going to be, first time it's going to be across, in two venues across the city. So it's going to be on in Smock Alley, in Temple Bar, and that'll be November 1 and 2, and then across in the Civic Theatre in Tala on November 3.
Yeah, which is where the Gods of the Ozarks is currently. So that's kind of nice that we have that. We'll be back there in two months. And you asked about choosing the plays. So with the November, it's great because we read all the plays that are submitted blind, so we don't know if it's a woman, a man, a monkey who's written it. And we have a panel of readers, and we narrow it down, and then we have, you know, the company members who will come and have a chat about all the kind of finalists that we've read, and then we build the night from that. So we don't know who the playwrights are.
It's very objective.
Until we've actually said, we want this. Yeah.
Well, so it worked. It worked for you in New York, so it's bound to work here, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what is the most challenging thing now, Paulie? What part of you in this now, the Ozarks, what part do you play?
So I play Jonah.
He's
the doctor in the town, who, as I say, is struggling to be a good doctor despite his best intentions.
And what's the most challenging thing now in this role for you?
I think one of the most challenging things about it is it's the contrast in the character. It's finding he's got an emotional journey. I think that initially was quite tricky in rehearsals to kind of work out where he was going, because he's there. A lot of the other characters are so much fun, and some of them are transforming into, they're becoming gods, and they have all these kind of crazy journeys. But in some ways, his is a quieter kind of, it's a tough journey for him. And so I think for me it was tough initially to work out what that was, but then kind of over the course of rehearsals we managed to find it, that this was for him, it's this interesting thing between science and religion, you know, between his faith in things and then rationality on the other side. And
which part of this character do you like most?
I think what I really like about him is his courage, willing to take a chance on something that's really crazy in order to try and fulfill his promise to his wife and to be a better doctor for his town. But he's having to do things that are really on the edge of criminal or that are secretive. He's having to hide things from so many people. But I really, I love how he goes for it, you know, and that makes it really fun too, because he kind of becomes a bit of a scoundrel in a way.
What kind of audience now do you think will like this best? What kind of play?
I think if somebody's looking for a good night out in terms of the comedy of it, it's like we had so much laughter last night in the show. It's got so many, the writing is so good, and there's so many fun situations and fun characters that I think if anyone just wants a good night out, they're going to have it. If you want to see something you've never seen before, because this is the world premiere of this show, it's never been done. Last night was the first time this show was ever done in the world in front of people.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah. And yeah, like every age, I think, would like it. There's a young, you know, there's a teenage character to identify with. There's a couple to identify with. There's a young girl trying to, you know, fulfill her dreams in burlesque. There's, you know, a
pastor who's a little bit lost.
Yeah.
Right.
Trying to find his way.
A general audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there is something for every member of the community in some ways, you know?
Yeah. And, we always like to do plays. We really love good stories.
Storytelling.
Yeah. Mm. So we really try to do things that, you know, maybe you have a friend, you like to go to the theater, maybe you have someone who's not necessarily a theater goer or something. We like to do plays that you can introduce you to the world of theater and to the language of theater with a really interesting, intriguing story, you know?
And you have a story of your own. You are very successful. In your own right, Anna. And you are directing this.
I am, yeah. Wow. I got to direct, which
is... Tell us a little about yourself. Where did you start? Where did you get the bug?
So I got the bug quite early on. I loved to perform when I was younger. So whether that would be singing in church or any time in school when there was acting, I would do it. So I think in my fourth grade, so that's kind of similar to, I think, third, fourth class, I think, I got to play Jackie and the Cornstalk, an adapted version of Jack and the Beanstalk.
Good.
So that was very exciting.
That's good.
So yeah, and I was bit by the bug, but I mostly did drama school, or sorry, mostly did it within school, school setting. And
which
then,
was where?
So I went to school and I was in the Midwest in the U.S. So yeah, so all the way in Wisconsin. And yeah, and so that was mostly what I did. And then there was maybe one community group, one or two community groups while growing up. And then when I went to university, I studied theater as well as criminal justice. So
media studies, journalism, does that all come into acting in some way? It's a good background.
It is. It's such a good background for me. I mean, I think what I most like about theater and, you know, plays and all that and acting is the social element as far as who are these people, why do we do what we do. I think people just fascinate me. So the social side of things, the sociology, you know, aspect of me is always
working.
Present. Yeah,
always working.
Yeah.
And why did you want to direct this one? The Gods of the Ozarks, for anybody just tuned in, you're here on Ear FM with Anna and Paul Nugent, who are speaking about their world premiere play, which started last night, grand opening night in the Civic Centre in Tala. So we're just talking to Anna now about why she wants to direct this play. What was it about?
So the first time I read it, so this was before we had chosen it, when we were just reading a bunch of plays, I was just struck by it. I really love the rhythm of the play, how it really goes seamlessly from scene to scene, or I shouldn't say seamlessly, because they kind of blend. You go from one scene to the next. It flows a lot. So I loved the language. I loved the characters. So I was really drawn to it. And then, you know, as an actress, I often look and I'm like, well, is there any role for me?
yes.
But I think that for this one, I had a sense of the play. Mm. I had a sense of how to tell this story. So I got an opportunity to direct the reading, the first reading that we had in the November festival.
Right.
And we just kind of found something
your
that
niche
worked.
That
yeah.
For you.
Yeah. So it just ended up being when we decided to produce it. It just seemed to make sense that I would be the director.
You would do that. Mm. As a matter of academic interest, does Paul take direction easily?
He does.
I've worked now.
I know.
What are you speaking about?
I'm always surprised, but he does. He does. He takes it very well. And especially because I was joking with the other cast members that unfortunately, like, he gets notes like 24/7, whereas they only get notes like at a certain, but it's something will pop up and I'm like, so you know that moment when you do that? No, I think we should instead.
So it goes home. Does it go home?
I'm halfway through my serial and she's going, you know that moment in Act 3?
Oh, well, that's called good communication. And what about
going on now from here, Anna? Where do you see yourself going after this, in this world?
Yeah, so I feel very lucky because I'm right now really doing what I love. So yes. I do still act whenever I get an opportunity, whether that's theater or TV and film, because I quite like being on camera as well. And I also teach. So I teach drama in prison, and I love that. That kind of fits another aspect of myself. And I still direct youth as well in plays. So I really feel like I'm getting an opportunity to use kind of all sides of myself. And for About Face, you know, we were away for 10 years and we're back again. So we're kind of building, we're kind of starting again from scratch. But already in 3 years, we've gathered a very loyal, you know, family, of a working family, which is great. And so now it's about sharing that with audiences and growing that so that we have a relationship of, you know, you know you can come and trust us to give you a good story and a good night out.
It's very different here. And tell us a little bit about working in America. I mean, it's totally different theatre. There's so many fringe and off-fringe and off-Broadway. And then these groups around that you work with, community groups or active groups. Or how does it work? The theater system.
Yeah, so we were in New York. As far as professionally, we were in New York when we were working in the theater. And it is just, there is so much there. There's just so much competition on, as you said, all different levels.
Yes.
So, and there's, you know, there's very good theater. There's a niche for everything. You know what I mean? There's a Yiddish theater. There's the, you know, there's many numerous new play theaters. There's, you know, this style of acting theater, and there's this Shakespeare theater, and there's drunk Shakespeare, and, you know. So I think it can be, you have to kind of find
your own.
Yeah, you have to find your people there, and you know, we were lucky enough to connect. We have good relationships with at least two or three different theaters, you know, that we both had a chance to work at multiple times. Which is super valuable, and is valuable for us too in the relationship, because one of our November plays from last year actually got a reading in New York then.
Good.
Which was a wonderful thing to have at the Cell Theater there. So I think it's, and I do think now that there's quite a bit going on here as well,
but the work is limited here.
It is.
Is it a closed shop? Is it very hard to get a break here? I know it's small. You can't really say that.
I mean,
Does it mean there's a lot of work in America? Is it easier to stay in work in that world in America than it is?
It's a very good question.
I think the thing is, it's what it is what you get is more opportunities, but also more competition.
Yes.
So I think in some ways it kind of works out the same way. I think there is, you're definitely closer to bigger opportunities more often if you're in somewhere like New York or Los Angeles. When it's tough, it's really, really tough. But when occasionally you get a little touch of glamour, you get your foot into stardust, or you get to work with somebody who's really famous, and you see them and you go, oh my God, I've watched you in movies for a long time. Or, you know, even just, you might even go to an event somewhere like that, and you get introduced to someone who's really a spectacular person, or you get to work on a new project that someone's developing. So that is, there is that glamour that you
so
don't
you
get anywhere else.
So you invite all kind of soirees, do you, at first nights?
Well, you know, or sneak into a few, you know, something like that.
Or you find a way, or you're catering it.
But now you mentioned film. You've worked in film, Paul, haven't you?
Yeah, bits and pieces. You know, I'm lucky enough to work on a couple of really cool things. I got to briefly, I do a small part on a big TV show in the States called The Blacklist. So I got to spend a day filming with James Spader, very famous actor who's been in films ever since the 80s. And that, my God, that was such a privilege just to watch him work for a day. To see a master, to see some, at this point, he'd been probably been in movies and TV for 30 years, and I just, you know, I could have gone back to my trailer and sat, but I just basically sat and watched him doing things, and then was like, oh, I have a few lines to do in a minute, but I just want to watch him rehearse.
His craft,
his knowledge of every small little thing. I remember even what I had to bring him a box with a ribbon wrapped around it, and the props person gave it to him, and it was a red ribbon or something, and he looked at me, no, I think it needs to be a black ribbon. I think my character, he would, this, the only one he would open would be one with a black ribbon on it.
That detail.
Like that level of detail. So just fascinating to watch someone like that work, you know.
And would you prefer to stage film work?
Film work is really fun, and it's great to be on a set. It's very exciting.
Pays more?
Definitely pays more. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely
very important.
Film and TV is definitely where you're going to get paid more. Theater is. I wouldn't advise anyone to get into theater for money. It definitely doesn't pay as well.
Well said.
But theater is, I think, probably where my heart is. I love the process of it. I love the shape of doing a show. I loved going from when you get cast to the first read through, to the way rehearsals progress from, you know, working on the script when you're looking at it, you know, talking about it, to then getting on its feet, and then the different stage when everybody's learnt their lines and you're at a different place, and then you add the costumes and you add the props, and then you move from the rehearsal room to the theatre, and then you get the lights and you see where you're going to, what room you're going to be in, and then you get an audience. So it's all these little stages that you keep adding. And also I just love the fact that every night it's different. As an actor, it's your responsibility to carry the show. If I phone it in one night, the show just will lose so much. And I have control. We, as an actor, you have control over that. It's your responsibility to give your audience that story. Film and TV is amazing, but at the end of the day, you don't control that. The editor and the director will control what they want to tell in the editing room. That's their choice. You give them options, and they'll make it. But for me, in theatre, it's my responsibility to make sure you have a good night.
And voiceovers. Tell me about your voiceovers. All the accents you can do. I've been checking up on you.
No, I can do a few accents and things. No, I've been really lucky with doing voiceovers, particularly getting into audiobooks.
Yes.
Got to do a fair bit of that. Started doing that in New York. I got to do some really fabulous novels for Audible over there,
That's very good. That's a big thing now, isn't it? People are going in that direction.
It's huge now. It's become a big thing. I think it had kind of died out to a certain extent when it was still all, you know, your big box of tape cassettes that you have at home. But I think particularly now with more like people can put it on their phone and they can play it in the car on long journeys or on their commutes off their phone, I think that technology has caused it to come way back. I know some people now that almost don't read. They just listen to audiobooks of their novels instead when they're on the go. I think it's a big... I think in the print industry, the print publication industry, I think it's the biggest growing element for publishers. Yeah. So they love getting good audiobooks out.
Have you done radio?
Radio
plays. Have either of you done radio plays?
I'm trying to think now. Have I ever done a radio play?
We have some friends who have been doing here. We have some friends who have directed for Near and have
We'll give them credit.
So Nicola is actually someone who we met in New York, and I think she's directed a few of the radio plays here. Right. And Dorothy Cotter is someone who trained the year below us at the Gaiety School of Acting, and she wrote one and looked like she was in one recently. And same with Killian, he was acted in one of yours, and he's been in our Christmas show since the first time we performed it. Yeah, so it's lovely to have those
because
kind
we have
of
a very vibrant drama group here.
Yeah, fantastic.
And they have done the best of plays. They really have. And they work in conjunction with a local drama group, the Riverside Drama Circle. And it's just, you know, involved the whole community. Mm. They take it out from here then and they do plays. And it's a very important part of radio.
Yeah,
I'm delighted to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's not just all wall-to-wall music, you know.
Yeah.
So we like to do a lot of that on Near FM.
Yeah, it's great to see that.
Yeah, I think it's a really fun thing to have really good radio plays. Sometimes when you listen to them, I think it's a very special, intimate experience of encountering a play.
Declan Gall, man of great experience, and he founded the local group 40 years ago along with one or two others, and they're still going.
That's amazing.
It is for a small local area.
Yeah.
So there is a place for drama groups, you think, in the community?
Oh, absolutely.
Musical societies.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing thing. You know, I think the confidence and the sense of courage and of play. And, you know, I think the other thing too is I think the life of an actor, a professional actor, is very tricky. And I think there's a lot of people who have incredible talent, but they just don't want to go down that route, or they try it for a while and go, no, or they have family reasons why they can't. So I think too, you get some people who I've seen in amateur groups and going, wow, so talented.
They can be semi-professional. The standard is very high.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's just, that's almost sometimes more of a lifestyle choice than a talent choice.
Oh, a great commitment. Yeah. And the other people go out and call night when the rest of us are sitting in. And yeah. Your neighbours. Yeah. They are mainly, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's, we're very proud of that now to know that you've connection here with Near FM.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask you both the same thing. What does success look like to either of you?
Oh, that's such a great question.
Because
No promises there. But it's something that I'm glad you asked, because I have thought about it. You know, because when you come out of drama school, your idea of success, or at least for me, was definitely like that stage. That, you know, it was very, very specific, and success looked like being very visible and, you know, being in the big houses and the this or that and being noticed.
Yes.
And somewhere in the first 10 years of my acting career, I had to ask the question of, is that really what success is for me? And is that the path that I am going for? Because then you kind of realize, you're like, well, if that was my goal,
yes,
then I should be working towards it in a different way. And you realize that, no, I actually, like, I adore black box theaters. I love, like, with here at the Civic, we're in the studio. I love that the audience is closer than we are to the actors at some points.
Yes.
So you can feel, you can see them breathe, you can feel them. You're part of the community.
You're
part of this community
because
you're there.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I guess for me, success now is much more, you know, am I doing what I love? Am I contributing positively to this world? Am I bringing joy, following the joy a little bit more? That to me is success.
What about you, Paul? What does success look like to you?
I think success is getting to do what you love, getting to work on projects that are interesting and that you believe in and that you're proud of and that you want to tell people all about, you want them to come and see. I think a bit like Anna, I think there was times when, of course, you know, you would have thought, oh, you wanted this career path, you would have been, want to be in this movie or that kind of thing. But you do, I think Anna had it dead right, you do find yourself going, oh, if I really, really, really wanted that, outside of just the crazy fantasy, I would be working only in that direction. I would put aside these other things that I find myself interested in, like having a theatre company, like wanting to give opportunities to someone else I see who's an amazing actor. I'm like, oh, I want to get him in a part. I want to get her in a part. I want to put them in a show together. I want to see what that looks like.
Nurturing talent.
Yeah, so, and that's really...
It's great personal satisfaction, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it's massive, actually.
It
and the older I get and the more, you know, it's strange to sometimes feel like I'm more senior to some younger actor who's coming through in their 20s, but because I feel very young still.
You
and,
are.
compared to so, and I feel like I know nothing compared to some of the other older people and more mature people in the community and in the industry. But it is really lovely to give someone a chance to shine and to then to see them flourish in that opportunity. I think that's really, it's really exciting and that's really fulfilling.
What about, I have to go back to the awful question, funding.
There's
funding. Take up a lot of your time, and
it's always a game because the mechanics of theatre is that the box office, unless you're charging Broadway type ticket prices, is never going to fully pay the bills of paying everyone a proper wage and all the costs that go into putting a show on. So
you're competing with companies who are fully funded, so they have subsidized ticket pricing, so. You know, technically for us, we probably should, you know, if we were really trying to recoup or something, would have tickets that were like €50 or something like that. But there's no way the market can't handle that.
Yeah.
No. So, because our tickets are more like 15 or 17.
I see that. Yeah. And concessions.
Concessions is 15
yes.
and regular price is 17.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so that's where we're at. So you're right, we have to find ways to make up that.
So you get no
gap.
Government funding or
we're not currently Arts Council funded. We've had some help from Dublin
Dublin City Council has supported our November Festival the last 2 years.
So that's
been great. Their arts office in Dublin City Council has been super helpful, very supportive.
Yeah.
The Arts Council, I think, is something we're building a relationship with them. They haven't funded us yet, but I think as we do more and more good work, I think, then it, we'll build more trust with them, and they'll want to support some more bigger projects that we'll want to put together. Hopefully, anyway, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
And you founded this company, both of you founded
yes.
it. And what are you going to do with it? Are you taking it back to America now? Are you going to travel with it? Or what are your plans to do with this company?
I think Dublin is home.
Dublin is home.
We want to yeah. build something here. We want to build a theatre that people can come to and know that they're going to get a good story, know they're going to have a good night out, that they can bring a friend or a family member to, and there's no risk. They know they're not going to have to say, oh, that was a strange show we brought you to, I'm sorry about that. They're going to know, they're going to have a good night out.
Build a reputation.
Yeah, I think that's what we want to do, and just build a little home for audiences to come and see good theatre, and for actors to kind of get to do good work, good fulfilling work, and to grow, and for all the kind of members of a theatre team to kind of find opportunities to chance to get in the door and find
and
their way.
And the audience is there because people are going out now in groups, and
yeah.
especially the senior citizens, they're great supporters of anything like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We go everywhere.
Mm-hmm. No, I think
it's great. Yeah.
I think it's true. I think if
and the Rose Concession and
yeah, yeah, I think once the work is good,
it's out there.
Yeah, once I really think the audience is absolutely there. Once the work is good and once you're creating good shows and people get to know you, I think the audience is absolutely there for a good night out.
Follow you.
Yeah.
So what can we look forward to? Any seasonal thing coming up now for the autumn? Or
We have the Gods of the Ozarks until Saturday. So four more chances to see that.
To see it?
Yep.
Is that a big venue? Is it small and intimate?
It's small and intimate. It's
lovely.
About 60, yeah. They have two theatres at the Civic. So
yes.
We're in the studio, the upstairs space. Yeah. And then in we have November. So that's coming up in November,
yeah.
from November 1 to 3. And then we are bringing back Orson Welles' A Christmas Carol, which actually was adapted by Paul.
Oh, and you must commit and tell us about that.
Yeah, because it involves a radio play.
Oh, terrific.
A live radio play
we look forward
stage.
To that.
Yeah.
You will come in?
Oh,
absolutely.
Course.
We'll definitely come in and talk about it.
Yeah.
Love to.
That's wonderful. Well, look, I can only wish you great success. You're a very talented couple.
Thank you.
Do you get in each other's nerves at home? Because you have huge talent, you say. Well, what do you do with the divas, or the divos indeed, on stage?
Oh, we do not have any room for that in our
company.
No
room for divas.
We have a no divas rule.
Or no diva or divo at home?
No. Well, no, not at home. No, no, actually, not
no.
really, no.
No.
I think
you just gel together. You can see that.
Yeah, we get on pretty okay, you know.
Which is
not bothering me over breakfast. You know?
You'll always have creative differences, I think.
Of
you know
course.
What I mean?
Yeah.
And there's
yes.
always the nerves and the, you know,
yes.
there's always they.
But you can
know.
Bounce off each other.
Yeah, and we know each other well enough to be give each other the space when we need
yes.
to and to and the forgiveness when we need that.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much for coming into on here FM. Really, we're delighted to have you. And
thank
our
you.
Door is always open. And do come back and tell us about this now when it's coming up for Christmas, or anything you want to promote anytime, come in now and we'll love to talk to you.
Thank
That's
you.
Brilliant.
And
thanks
we'll do
so
a
million,
podcast
Connie.
For you that we'll put on our own website. And we'll send you then out a direct link that you can just get into it and do what you like with it after that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you, Connie.
So, big last reminder. Four more nights
For the Gods of the Ozarks. That's at the Civic Theatre in Tala, and that's shows at 8:15 p.m. Tickets are still available from the Civic Theatre if you go to their website
or pay at the door
as well. It's totally fine.
And we have a talk back with the playwright who's over from the States tomorrow night, Thursday night.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, that'll be really
good
fun.
And how long? Is it a long play? Or?
It runs about 100 minutes with an intermission in the middle. So, you'll be out the door by 10 o'clock.
Oh, people like that. Really,
yeah.
They do like to get home around that time, as you probably discovered.
Yes, I think so.
Well, thank you very much again.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you, Connie.